This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
It is Thursday. We are headed for the 4th of July this coming weekend. And things that I look at here, frankly, scare the hell out of me. I don't even know where to begin. I'm not quite sure where to begin today, but there is so much to cover that simply must get to it. Let's start with the fallout from Brexit, shall we? Let's start there and talk about what was said yesterday by the leaders of Canada and Mexico and the U.S. and their American Union get-together, if you will. Prime Minister Trudeau of Canada focusing on the North American clean environment, clean and secure energy, 50% renewables by 2025. That's 8.5 years from now. 50% renewables. Clean and efficient transportation. Protect nature, he said. Focus on scientific understanding and act aggressively against climate change. Talking about a North American trade zone, human rights, partners on defense of fundamental rights, whatever that means. You know, the first thing they talked about, the most important single issue, apparently, to Obama, Trudeau, and then the president of Mexico is the LGBT community, and second is global warming. These are the two most pressing issues facing North America today, apparently. Then there were comments about working toward a more united, integrated, focus on the key words here, integrated, competitive North America. Reaffirming to work with a vision to advance economic integration. These are the themes that kept showing up during the comments yesterday. North American clusters, single trade windows, bolstering trade in the region, trilateral cluster maps. What is a tri? Yeah, you know where that goes. Trilateral program for trusted travelers and all sorts of other stuff, right? This is what they were focusing on. The centerpiece of the plan, by the way, this clean energy effort, to push to generate 50% of electricity in North America from renewable sources by 2025. It includes nuclear, my friends, which is okay with me. But it's kind of a smokescreen. The centerpiece is a plan to create more renewable energy, nuclear power, advanced fossil fuel technology, and energy efficiency measures, which means, you know, the whole thing about how Brussels, Belgium, was dictating to the rest of the continent, you know, what they could have and use, like how much your teapot, how much energy it could use in Britain. That was one of the things that really pushed these people over the edge to say goodbye to the European Union. Well, those sorts of ideas, though not centralized, the globalists still don't get it. Mexico also will join with the U.S. and Canada push to reduce methane emissions by at least 40% by 2025. There's at least 10 jokes in there. All three countries pledging federal methane regulations. Tacos and burritos will no longer be served. See, I told you there was humor in there. All right, and so while all of this is going on, according to a new policy, so back to the Brexit, and this globalist, they can't let go of the idea that they lost. according to a new foreign policy document from the Brussels-based institution, from the European Union, the defense policy from the Brussels chief says that they need a new army. EU foreign policy chief Federica Mogherini's global strategy document states that as Europeans, we must take greater responsibility for our security. The white paper adds, while NATO exists to defend its members, most of which are European, from external attack, Europeans must be better equipped, trained, and organized to contribute to such collective efforts, as well as to act autonomously if and when necessary. That was one of the big threats, of course, of Brexit. We'll build our own army. Well, then, build your own army. A more credible European defense is essential also for the sake of a healthy transatlantic partnership with the United States, it says. While it stresses that NATO remains a primary framework for the member states. Mm-hmm. So the globalists just, they refuse to hear the fact that people want their own countries back, this country back. Europe wants its own identity individually. And yet the Germans and the French and the Belgians are going to push and prod and fight for. And fight for this super state, this German slash French, and primarily German, make no mistake, super state. Because the Germans are in the position that they're the most financially sound, the strongest position to create this opportunity, if it's an opportunity at all. All right, meanwhile, let's look at some polling, because we're going to get to some other things here, because the biggest shocking story from yesterday I'm going to get into after the break, a story that just, it's astounding is what it is. Two new polls out have different snapshots of the race between Clinton and Trump. Of course, the media doing its level best to push Clinton over the top. Democrat Hillary Clinton has a 42% to 40% lead, 2 points in a Quinnipiac poll. In a new Fox News poll, Clinton's up by 6, and 89% say they describe Donald Trump, this is from a Fox News poll, by the way, as hot-headed. He's had a few rocky weeks in the campaign trail, and it shows in the latest Fox News poll. Just over half of Republicans would rather have someone besides Trump as the nominee. And his support in the presidential ballot test has dropped 7 points since May. Democrat Hillary Clinton, though not exactly closing the deal up, leading just 44% to 38%. The Libertarians and the Green Party will have impact this time around. They will have impact this presidential race. Well, they're going to win, no. They're not going to win, but they will have impact. All right, it's Thursday. Coming up after the break, I have to share with you something that I find shocking on every level. Something that happened yesterday that you won't hear a heck of a lot about today, but you should know well about because it's going to change, well, could change a lot of things about the future of the United States. Financially, that is. It's 14 after. It's the Steve Gruber Show.
Covering Michigan and the world from his bunker below the bridge. Here is Steve Gruber.
Every day I get in the queue. To get on the bus that takes me to you.
I feel like we ought to be in a bunker, I'll tell you that. I'm so nervous, I just sit and smile. Yeah. So here's the thing that's going to change everything, because this is appalling. This is absolutely appalling. Late last night, the United States Senate approved legislation to take care of Puerto Rico's debt. And it wasn't even close. This is absolutely appalling. By a vote of 68 to 30, the United States Senate cleared a bill that will let the island restructure its massive debt load, establish an outside control board to police its troubled finances, and stick you with the bill. It's now headed to President Obama, who has been a vocal proponent of the measure, and of course he'll sign it in short order. Of course he will. just in time for you and I to pick up a $2 billion debt payment come Friday. The Senate bill also stopped any potential litigation between the island and creditors and allow outside officials to step in to try to steer toward a more organized resolution. So basically, anybody that the island owed money to, well, you're screwed. The American taxpayer, you're screwed as well. And it's not the fact that Puerto Rico has $72 billion in debt, probably more than that, $72 billion in reported debt. That's all fine and well. The problem is states like Illinois and New York and California have hundreds of billions of dollars in debt. And now the United States Senate has just set a precedent that it cannot come back from. So when Illinois decides that it doesn't want to pay its bills either, which is not very far away, by the way, because the state of Illinois, financially speaking, is an absolute dismal, dismal mess. So what the Senate has done, Republicans, right along with their cronies on the other side of the aisle, have shown no political leadership, no will to turn this country around, no will to chip away at the $20 trillion in debt we're facing. They might as well all be Democrats. They might as well all be socialists. Because, frankly, what the hell is the difference? We elect people to do something different. We elect people for fiscal responsibility. And Puerto Rico created its own problems with failed social programs over 50 years. Five decades of decadence has led to this disaster, and they want us, they've got the hangover, and they want you and I to pick up the bar tab. And now apparently we're going to. Because we don't have any choice, because our elected officials said, sure, why not? Let's go do it. See, when it comes to squandering your money, they can have bipartisan agreements. When it comes to doing something really bad for your future and the future of this country, bipartisanship is all the rage. Back in about 1955, 1960, by the way, just for a little history lesson here, Puerto Rico was a prosperous, thriving place. More than 90% of its citizens worked. There was no debt to speak of. It was a going thing. And then along came the social programs, the Great Society, and expanded welfare opportunities. Today in Puerto Rico, more than 60% of the people there, did 70? 70. More than 70% of the people there, excuse me, get some sort of government check every month. Some sort of subsidy, some sort of a payment from the government. Staggering, isn't it? Only about 40% of the people on the entire island work. Think about that. In 1965, 9 out of 10 residents of Puerto Rico were going to work every day. That's 4 out of 10. And out of those 4 out of 10, a big chunk of those jobs are not in the private sector at all. They're government jobs. Puerto Rico's path to poverty, path to bankruptcy, was paved by their own decisions. It's been led by left-leaning Democrats for 50 years. It's a larger version of Detroit, if you will. Terrible policies for 5 decades, leading the place right into the ditch. And no big deal, because we've got bipartisan support to make sure you cover the bill. Don't you feel good and warm and fuzzy now? You're a good guy, because you're going to work today and you're picking up the tab for Puerto Rico. What's truly sad about it is that these policies have taken a prosperous place, hardworking people, and turned it into a micro version of Venezuela. Just another socialist. Socialism fails every single time. When applied on this scale, on this level, it fails. Whether it's Venezuela or Puerto Rico or soon Illinois and New York, all of these place, all of these experiments that end up in the same place, broke and destroyed. Because when you take away the work ethic and reward people for not contributing and punish those that work and save and are industrious, the end result is always the same. And it will be same across America and for America itself. If we don't learn how to save money and create wealth and work hard and create jobs, but we need more taxes. Taxes does not create wealth. Government does not create wealth. I mean, this is such a simple illustration. What school kids ought to be taught today is about Venezuela and Puerto Rico and why they failed and why their finances failed and why others had to come to their rescue. These should be the two lessons being taught to kids today and pounded in. Oh, Lord. You see how this becomes, you know, a bit much everything. Anyhow, it's Thursday on the Steve Gruber Show.
Taking a closer look at the stories that affect you most with a big dose of common sense.
Something for you to consider. Nigel Farage, the man who spent a quarter century fighting against the EU, Nigel Farage, the guy who let it happen, who drove the Leave campaign's surprising electoral success. Surprising, they say in columns all over, but I wouldn't say it's all that surprising. He took to the floor of the parliament yesterday. Said, you guys haven't done your job in 25 years. That's the problem. He has the attention now, and he's focusing on the 2016 presidential campaign. When asked about Hillary Clinton, he was crystal clear, saying that if he were eligible, there is nothing on earth that could persuade him to ever vote for Hillary Clinton, yet he did not stop there. He went on to stress the issue of elitism, of which the poster child is none other than Mrs. Clinton herself, going so far as to claim, I mean, she represents the pinnacle elite. It's almost as if she feels she has this sort of divine right to have the job. Doesn't that describe it so aptly? A divine right to be president. That's what she's preordained, because she is the elite. When addressing Donald Trump, he said, while in not full force embrace, was at least warmer in his reception of the businessman than the former Secretary of State, saying Donald Trump dares to talk about things other people want to brush under the carpet. I think for the UK, I think Trump will be better for us than Barack Obama has been. Of that, there is no doubt. Yet, to be clear, he did stop short of any endorsement of Trump for the office. He also seemed to downplay the significance of Donald Trump by claiming the problems America faces pale in comparison to the issues Britain has before it. Apparently the colonies must just think too much of themselves, he said, which is cute. Anyhow, you know, the colonies. Let's see here. Still cleaning up in Istanbul, Turkey, the death toll rising now to 42. More than 200 injured in the attacks at the airport there, three bombers, and now more warnings going out. More warnings going out that America will be targeted even more significantly in the days and weeks ahead. And how many of these attacks we're going to take under this president, as they continue to claim that ISIS is, well, basically if you tear it down, ISIS is irrelevant. It's not irrelevant, of course, to the people whose bodies are torn to shreds by bombs, or whose husbands and wives and children and friends are murdered by these people. But other than that, other than those, you know, few details, ISIS is basically irrelevant. They can't beat America. We're winning. We've got them contained, and so on and so forth. But it's just not the case. Campaigning in northern Maine yesterday, and who does that? Donald Trump does, apparently. An area rarely visited by presidential candidates, Trump touted his ideas as balancing the trade deficit and how he plans to deal with ISIS. It's clip seven. Go.
They totally control Hillary Clinton. And then I watch her on television about ISIS. Okay, well, we're going to this. It's like this. We're going to this and we're going to that. We're going to this. I've been watching her for so many years. She has been in that position for so long in one way or the other. She hasn't done anything about what's going on. All right. ISIS was formed during her tenure. ISIS is now worse than ever. You see what happened yesterday. You see what's going on generally. ISIS is looking strong. ISIS is signing up people over the internet. They know how to use the internet better than we do, and we do nothing about anything. They're taking our youth. You know why they're taking our youth? Because they look like they're winning. We have to give them a big, fat, ugly defeat. Yeah.
I like that idea, actually. We have to give them a big, fat, ugly defeat. Because they can tell us that we're, you know, taking Raqqa and Mosul and Fallujah or whatever might be going on, we being the Iraqis taking back territory from ISIS. But when you see what happens in Istanbul or Paris or Orlando or San Bernardino or Brussels, it does look like, to the world, that they're winning. The hotline is open today, 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. I mention it because Steve is on the hotline. Steve, welcome to it.
Good morning. I'm going to say this yet again. We have a Muslim president that is a communist sympathizer. We have a Hillary Clinton. Everything you said is absolutely true. Last February, when I was in Puerto Rico, the first thing the self-checkout machine asked me for was my government debit card.
Are you serious?
It was the first.
Hold on.
Dead serious.
Hold on. Wait a second. You were in Puerto Rico, what, vacationing?
Yes, in February.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Nice place. Probably a great place to be in February. No snow, right? Okay, that part I understand. The first thing the machine asked you for was a government card?
It asked me for my government debit card first.
Wow.
First thing right out of the gate.
That's insane.
About that. I'm not making this up. I can take you right back to the location.
All right. Go on.
And we also have and even the taxi drivers were seriously not happy. PO'd, we'll call it that. About the direction things had gone. The one taxi driver pointed out the thousands of millions of dollars that had been dumped into government housing. You only have to come up with something to the tune of $45 a month to have one of those little flats. And that's utilities paid, by the way.
It has
turned into a monumental mess. Period.
No question. It's unbelievable, and now you get to pick up the tab, and you get to pick up the tab for those little government cards as they slide through there. First and foremost, that's the most shocking thing I've ever heard. That's an incredible story.
Well, you damn well better believe it, because I can take you there.
No, well, I'm not sure I want to go.
And when you're watching those fireworks on Independence Day and where we've come from and opposed to where we are, you are absolutely correct. Our government has not done what they need to do. It's all been about the polls and popularity. We need someone to grow a pair, step up to the plate, and make the tough decisions. Just Michigan alone, they can't even come together to fix the roads. This is craziness.
Steve, thanks for calling, my friend.
Thank you for your time.
All right, appreciate that very much. Easy on the coffee. He's absolutely right, though. Can you believe, and I believe him, can you imagine going to the store and the first thing it asks you for is your government card? That's nuts. It's 41 after the hour. This hour brought to you by Visbean Architects, the home of the hands-on live design process with Wayne Visbean. It is the most incredible design process anywhere today, and the reason Wayne Visbean is one of the most sought-after architects and designers working today. And I have something very special for you. If you are seriously considering designing your own custom home now, I have good news. Your first live design session with Wayne Visbean is free. Now, where are you going to get that today? Free. Log on today to find out more. It's VisBean. That's VisBean.com. 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 Bringing you this hour of the Steve Gruber Show.
Delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty.
You know, back in the day, I drove a lot of Volkswagens. I know that's probably hard to believe. I started with a bright canary yellow Super Beetle. Oh, yeah. That was me. Mm-hmm. Had a Dasher wagon, a Rabbit, a Golf. Oh, I had all sorts of Volkswagens back then. But it was the Super Beetle. You know, bright yellow. I mean, that was me. Hair was a little longer. Might have been a little less serious about life, too. But let me tell you what is serious. This settlement with Volkswagen over cheating on emission standards. Their chips were smarter than they were supposed to be. Created a big problem. Joining me to talk a little bit about it is Paul Carrier, Western Michigan University Cooley Law School professor who teaches courses in international law, explaining why Volkswagen may have taken so long to agree to a settlement. Professor, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you.
We're talking about, what, $10 billion here. I mean, it's no small thing. But there was talk at one time that this whole scandal could, you know, force Volkswagen into bankruptcy. Obviously, that hasn't happened. $10 billion, a very bitter pill, but they can handle it. Tell me how we arrived at this point to begin with, if you could.
Well, I think that one of the main things to think about is the fact that the people that were working on this particular problem knew it in advance. And so you've seen other settlements before, for example, when the Ford Explorer had bad tires. And typically something happens, people learn that there's a danger after it starts to happen, and it's not pre-planned. And so one of the problems here is that this was basically concocted purposefully and so it's not as if anyone's playing catch-up. They actually created this problem themselves, and there's a bit of a kind of an intent behind it. And so that might be one of the reasons why the settlement amount is going to be so high. Another problem is that the $10.2 billion is, I wouldn't say it's the tip of the iceberg, it's very large, but there are still possible fines out there. For example, with the FAA for false advertising. And so Volkswagen might not be done. And it is my guess that Volkswagen is participating in thinking about paying such a high amount so that perhaps the claims that might remain from government fines will be minimized.
Well, right, and they are. I mean, $10.2 billion, like I said, is no small thing. It's very significant. There could be some other additional penalties out there still to come. But it is something that Volkswagen can handle. I mean, depending on who you talk to today, the two biggest car companies in the world are Volkswagen and Toyota. And Volkswagen is now on the verge of being the biggest producer of transportation, private transportation in the world. So it's a giant company now, producing a lot of units. And I don't know, did this hurt its sales and so forth? I don't know if it hurt its sales because I still see Volkswagens rolling out of the showroom and I see them going down the highway. Did it hurt the company that way, do you know?
Yes, it did. I don't know the exact numbers, but the markets have definitely taken a hit for Volkswagen. What will happen, though, is, obviously consumers tend to be relatively intelligent. And so once the problem is fixed, and especially if the prices are reduced a bit for the autos, then my guess is that people will be back buying Volkswagens.
So in the end, ironically enough, and what occurs to me as you say that, so Volkswagen's going to have they're going to be on sale for a while, I think is a good way to put it. The Volkswagen's going to be on sale, and therefore, price sells, you know that. Price sells in so many places, so if Volkswagen's discounted its price, it could move volume, and maybe it could make up that $10 billion a little bit quicker than if the cars weren't on sale.
That's probably true. And so, if it's actually handled correctly, then Volkswagen can come out looking pretty good in the end. And obviously, what was done was not good. But, it's these large companies like Volkswagen find ways to continue. And so I don't expect that's going to go out of business.
Now, what it did is...
Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, they cheated on their emissions test here, for anybody that didn't realize. They were cheating, and the cars were giving indications of what their emissions were, and their actual emissions were different, coming out of the tailpipe, if you will. But, I mean, in real-world impact, I don't know that it had any real-world impact, except on the bottom line of Volkswagen in the end. It's, I mean, environmentally speaking, it would be marginal, my guess.
Well, that's something that is actually very hard to quantify. And so, how can you prove with the small increments spread over basically not only the country but the world, how can you prove its exact damage to health? And that would be impossible to do. And so,
well, no, we just call Al Gore. Al Gore can put a figure on that, I'm sure. I'm joking, of course. it's almost impossible to figure out. But they did cheat, and no matter where you are on the Al Gore scale, I guess, it's hard to figure out. But they cheated. They got caught, and there's the penalty. Bam.
Right. And again, the penalty's not quite finished yet, because what we see is the payments are now for the people who bought the cars and who actually paid for a certain vehicle with a certain emission standard. And there might be a little bit of environmental protection money in the settlement as well, but it's not over yet. And so we'll see what the ultimate price is. Again, though, as you seem to realize, my suspicion is that Volkswagen will find a way to thrive. And it'll take a little while to pick up the pieces. But I don't expect for Volkswagen to certainly won't go out of business.
No, they're not going to fold their tent. No, they're going to put on a tent sale. They're going to make cash, and they're going to come out of this smelling like a rose, Professor, is what it sounds like. I guess I'm probably not getting money for my 73 Super Beetle. I'm getting nothing.
I'm sorry to say that might be a little bit before where this problem started. Yeah.
I'm a little disappointed to hear that, sir. I got to be honest. Anyhow, Paul Carrier, good conversation, good fun. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
There you have it, Paul Carrier, Professor Carrier from the Western Michigan University Cooley Law School. He teaches courses in international law. I bet he had a beetle, too. He just wouldn't admit it because he's got to go to class today. Kids would look at him going, what, did you have a ponytail, too? I'm joking. It is Thursday here on the program. Did I have a ponytail? I'm not going to answer that question. I'm not answering it. You have to find pictures. Prove it. We'll be right back.